2017, three men joined together in a pact to see what they could collectively do to advance civilization, further the cause of world peace, and elevate mankind. These three men were internationally renowned musician and Linkin Park multi-instrumentalist Dave Phoenix Ferrell, multiple PGA Tour champion and world-class golfer Brendan Steele, and Mark. They named themselves the Members. Those who they chose to sit with and ponder the mysteries of the universe, they named the Guests. What you're about to listen to is one of those historic conversations. Welcome to the Member Guest Podcast. Welcome to Member Guest.
Hello, everybody. All right, we're in. Mark, Brendan, what's going on?
There's a lot going on. I mean, we're hanging out at Mark's house, our home away from home here. And I think we've got a really fun, good guest here that we'll get into in a moment.
We got an afternoon podcast, which is kind of nice. A little sunshine.
It's a beautiful day here in Southern California, middle of our winter. We have an East Coast, well, somewhat of an East Coast transplant. I was going to make fun of your winters that you currently have to deal with now. But I was going to be referring more towards the, you know, our stomping grounds, the Eastern Seaboard, but now you're more, you know, in a nicer climate.
I love how Dave connects with every guest it's based on...
Yeah, ongoing joke.
Oh, hey, yeah, I'm actually Canadian, and I'm also from Massachusetts, and but if you're from California, that's I'm from there too.
This podcast so far has been very New England-centric. I don't know if you guys have picked up on that, but...
I like that.
Yeah, me being... a New Englander. I've been able to share that in common. And then with Loops, you know, I am half Canadian, so we bonded over being Canadian.
I'm waiting for you to not bond with somebody over where you're from. So without further ado, our guest today is a major champion on the PGA Tour, won the 2011 PGA Championship, something we may get into a little later because I think we share some pretty cool moments about that. He's also won a World Golf Championship and the Byron Nelson in 2011. I don't think there's very many players on the PGA Tour that have a major, a WGC, and a regular win. I think we could count them probably on two hands at the most. He's been on Ryder Cup teams, President's Cup teams. One of my best friends, New Englander, Keegan Bradley.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Welcome, Keegan. Thanks. Are you nervous to be here?
I'm very nervous. I've been listening to the podcast. They've all been incredible. I enjoy the music people that have been on. I'm sure there's the music people probably enjoy the golfers, but I've been having a blast listening to the musicians because I was talking about this with you at dinner the other night. I would, in a second, trade my golf ability in to be a musician. It wouldn't even be close. And you said you would trade yours in to be a golfer.
No, right? I never said that.
You did? I find that hearing of the musicians is really fun.
Yeah, you were saying you like hearing the musicians. And ironically, I think the musicians also like hearing the musicians. No, but there's definitely the grass is always greener somewhere else.
Right. Well, everybody seems to play golf when they are in another career, like basketball players, hockey players, baseball players. They all love golf.
Are you mostly nervous to be here today because John's already done this?
Yeah, I saw Steely today. I was like, you gotta let me know some of the insides to what Johnny said because I can't be worse than Johnny. Mine has to be better. Has to be.
Well, and you haven't listened to the Johnny podcast yet, which is...
I haven't.
That's dangerous to come on without having heard that one, because John could have thrown some things at you a little bit.
I saw him in the locker room today, and I said, you got to tell me some of these things John said. I haven't had the chance to listen to it. And he said, there was nothing that I needed to know, but I feel like there was, because all my buddies were texting me that he was talking about me, so...
Well, just be honest. Speak from the heart when it comes to John.
That was one of the things that was really funny, actually, having John on, was the progression that starts with, like, the talking of trash. I don't know why I said that so formally. The talking of the trash.
That's a new one. I've never heard that.
I like that.
I will now talk of the trash.
That's very classy.
The trash talk? The trashing of the talk? The talking of the trash?
The trash talk.
But then that gradually massage it, and towards the end, then it gets to the kindness and the like, yeah, I appreciate him because X, Y, Z.
Right, yeah. If I started to talk to my friends and be like really formal and nice, something probably went seriously wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They would probably say at that point, isn't Keegan talking of the trash?
They'd look at me and go, what's going on? Is everything okay? You feeling all right?
And even in talking about this podcast, when you listened to the episode one and you were like, I don't want you to get weird and like what I'm about to say, blah, blah, blah. And I'm going, oh God, what is he going to say? And he's like, I think it's really good.
Yeah. It was weird. Like, I felt like I needed to. Yeah. I don't want to be thanked, or I don't want to just, I really enjoyed it. Let's not talk about it again.
Yeah.
I get the sentiment from talking to you and talking to John and even some of the other guys that you appreciate what you have on tour. As far as a group of friends and buddies that not only understands where each other's at, not only is in like the same environment every day in and day out, but actually sincerely enjoys each other's company and would love to hang out even if you weren't doing the same job, you know, in a sense day to day. Is that a common thing that you see, or is it something that would be more special with your crew? And
on the tour, there's definitely cliques. The guys from the South, the guys from, I don't know, Texas, New Englanders, California people can, Jamie comes into the New Englander crowd. Yeah, California, New England, kind of, it's weird. They mesh.
Yeah.
But I know for me, when I first came out on tour, I was totally by myself. Over the years, when I got to know Steely, and then, of course, John, when he got out on tour, it's so much better because golf is a lonely sport as it is.
Right.
So when things are going bad, it can be brutal. And even when things are going really good, it's more fun to share it with your friends. Or if Steely wins Safeway, or, you know, we're watching on TV or watching Johnny or Jamie or some of the other guys, it's fun to have a crew that you root for. Steely's going up against another player. We're rooting for Steely. We crave the team atmosphere in golf because it's so individual. So anytime you can get a little camaraderie, it makes it a lot more fun.
I mean, that's why the President's Cup and the Ryder Cup, those types of things are such a big deal, right? I mean, you've been lucky enough to be a part of a few of those teams. I know we would like to be on one of those teams together, although you've said that it would be too much to handle and you just like deck me on the first day because you're too excited. But like there will be guys that maybe you're not friends with going in, and you share this experience together and you have a different respect for them or look at them a different way on the other side of it.
The Ryder Cup and President's Cup teams are something I hope Steely gets to watch. I'm sure he's going to, but it's such a incredible experience. It's so powerful what goes on in these tournaments. It's hard to describe into words because A, you got crowds going crazy, which doesn't happen in golf.
Right.
B, you have teammates for the first time. That is incredible. And three, you're playing for USA. So there's these three incredible dynamics to it. And especially in golf, there's never a time really where Steely's my partner and we're a team.
Right.
Now I might root for Steely and hope he does well, but when we're playing alternate shot in the Ryder Cup, and he's got to hit my shot, I got to hit his, we're really on a team here. And there is so much pressure. But the reward of a Ryder Cup, the reward of winning matches and making birdies is so incredible that it's worth waking up in the morning and not being able to feel your arms, going into the locker room and not really being able to talk. You walk into a Ryder Cup locker room in the morning and there isn't a word. Everyone's dead silent. Everyone's so nervous.
Do you think the majority of that pressure is just coming from, like you're saying, being on a little bit more of a team environment? You're used to disappointing yourself to some extent. Like you're used to having things go poorly and you know how you react to that when it doesn't go how you want it. But that added pressure of almost you don't want to let down anybody else who's there, especially like what you're talking about in an alternate shot format. Brendan hits a great drive. Now you're like, I don't want to mess up this approach.
Yeah.
Is that what's loading that on? Or is it, like you said, all the different...
That's a big part of it. You also got 11 other guys on your team.
Yeah.
You need to pull your weight. You're playing for your country. And there's something that goes on when you have the bag and the USA clothes and the crowd is going so crazy. Like you imagine when you were a kid, when you're walking to the tee in a Ryder Cup, the crowd is going crazy like you might feel running into a Super Bowl. Everything gets amplified by 1,000. I've played in majors. I'm lucky enough to win one. It's not even in the same realm of nerves. It's times 10. We had dinner with Phil the other night. Phil was my partner. I haven't played a match in any of them without him. They're without a doubt my favorite golf memories from when I was a kid till winning tournaments. Those are the ones that I think about the most.
You've said in the past that Phil was a mentor for you in the game. And does that make it even that much more special?
I got one of the best players ever as my partner. I don't want to let him down. I'm a rookie. I'm 26 years old, and I've idolized Phil my whole life. And I remember Davis Love was our captain. He came up to me. It was such an incredible thing to say to me at the time. He said to me, Phil needs you as much as you need him, in that I would let Phil talk and vent, and as opposed to maybe another veteran might say, let's just play. You know, with Phil, I'm listening to all his stuff, and it helped me dramatically. But that little thing that Davis told me really helped. You know, in these Ryder Cups, sometimes his partnerships work, sometimes they don't. And it just clicked with Phil and I. We had so much fun, and our games complement and alternate shot complement each other so well. We genuinely like each other. Right. So that's a huge part of it. So, you know, early on in that Ryder Cup, I made a bunch of putts to win the holes, and he came up to me on like the sixth hole. He goes, all I want is for you to feel that feeling of you watching me make a long putt to win the hole. So on the sixth hole, his alternate shot, I hit it to like 35 feet, and he stepped up and made it. And I just ran over to him, and like I was getting violent. Like I was getting like I would hit him. I would scream at the top of my lungs. I remember he went up to high five me one time, and I went for like a fist pound and just boxed his hand. Like I blacked. So if Steely and I were partners, considering our friendship, I might just deck him if he made a putt.
First tee, run up and just knee him in the balls, full bore. We're doing it. Bam.
Yeah. So
take that.
So I haven't played in the last couple. So the Ryder Cup's in Paris this year. So you crave it, because it's a real letdown not to be on those teams.
I don't think a lot of times people realize that as a musician on tour, the show itself is, you know, maybe 2 hours a day, depending on how long your set is. It's roughly 2 hours a day. And you're not even playing every day, but you're gone from home and you're out on tour every day. So if you have a 3-month tour and you're doing 3 to 4 shows a week, that means that your actual time that people are watching you do what you do, or thinking like this is what they do all the time on tour, it's really only like 8 hours of that entire week. The rest of the time, you're figuring out other stuff to do. If you're a solo artist, the comparison would almost be like playing golf or playing tennis, where, yeah, you know some other people who are out there on tour, but you don't have like a team with you, versus being in a band. You do have like that camaraderie, the other guys, you're on a team, for lack of a better way to say it. Like when you celebrate or win something, you can do it together. When something sucks, you're still going through that like all together. Even like Mark's been on tour with us for 20 years, but touring together, you have that opportunity to kind of like just share in your victories together. And I can blame Mark when something goes poorly. Right. That helps it.
I can take it.
Yeah.
Dave, you were saying that when we were first talking about getting this podcast going too. You were just like, you know, I want to do things with my friends and things that I like, and I want to do it like as a group. And that's something that we always miss out on. If you're not in those Ryder Cup, President's Cup moments, we do have our group that we get to travel with and get to hang with, but it's not like if Keegan wins a tournament, I'm super happy for him, but it doesn't drive my career for me. You know, it doesn't actually help my golf, except for the Zurich tournament now. Yeah. So they started a team event last year in New Orleans. We didn't play very well last year. This is our year this year. We got really spoiled because we played in the Shark Shootout, another team event in 2011.
A rookie year.
And we're coming off. I won my rookie year. Keegan won twice. He won Byron Nelson and the PGA Championship. And then we go into this Shark Shootout thing together, and we're like, we're going to kill everybody. And we did.
Yeah.
So then we've played a couple of things since then, and it hasn't gone as well. And we get a little, like, our expectations got really high.
You're smart enough and experienced enough to know we don't just show up and tee it up and we automatically win. But at the back of your head, you're kind of like, yeah, but we kind of do.
Yeah, well, when we team up, we get like really bummed out if we don't do well.
We're a little too emotional. Like we were joking around the other day that like we got to take Zurich way less seriously this year. Just like drinks every night, playing cards in the casino, and then like if somebody hits it in the water, we'll just joke about it. Yeah, yeah, like, oh, that was cool. Did you see the splash it made? Like somehow I don't think that's how it's gonna work.
Good shot. Kind of reminds me of the Bellagio. That's awesome. That would be a funny place if you could ever get yourselves into that like mindset. Just to see as like
we'd probably win. Honestly, we'd do really well.
Right.
I mean, that's the mindset you want to get into as a golfer, no matter if it's a team event. That's it. You want to just be like, when we play on our own or we play with our buddies on a tournament, you never get upset. right? I mean, you'll be bummed out, but
I do.
But I mean, in a tournament, that's ultimately where you're trying to get to is, oh, I hit it in the water, and it's you just move on. These team tournaments are fun for Steely and I. So we like to get strategy going and have fun. So
talk about it for months and a
day. Yeah.
You got to coordinate some outfits.
We did that in 2011.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we did. We coordinated the outfits and made it look really, really nice. Maybe that's the problem. I don't think we've done that since.
Yeah, we'll do that this year. Yeah,
Dave and I can design outfits for you guys. If you just trust us, we'll put something together for you.
If we're going to do it, here's the rule. You guys have to basically sign on sight unseen.
Oh.
So you have to say, okay, we're in.
And Dave will make you sign a contract for that too, as we know.
It'll be in my notebook and it'll be scribbled. It's a trust thing.
I don't think you're a big podcast listener as far as like in general, but I do know that obviously a huge Howard Stern guy.
Yeah.
And been listening forever, and that's the only thing that's ever on in your car. And then when you're on the road, when you're by yourself, like that's on all the time. I'll see you walking through the lobby and your headphones are in, and it's always Howard Stern.
Right.
And like when you first turned pro and stuff too and driving around, it was kind of like your only friend on the road, right, if you will. But like talk a little bit about like why you like him so much and like what that brings to you, like when you're traveling and everything.
Yeah, I mean, you're always on the road. You're always trying to find constants. You guys would know this. Like probably when you have a family, it's your family. But when I first turned pro, I listened to Howard in college and I loved him. And then he switched over to Sirius Radio, which meant I could have him on wherever I went. So I turned pro and I played a year in the Hooters tour, and I had a little blue Ford Focus. Like the car barely went like 60 miles an hour, but I bought a Sirius XM attachment for my car. You never flew on the mini tours, you just drove. So I'd pack my car and I would have 10, 15, 20 hour drives, and I just listened to Howard the whole time and I loved it. Honestly, I missed those days of travel where I'm just in the car driving and listening to Howard. And I always felt like no matter where I was, still today, I can turn on Howard and it's just like I'm home, or I'm just, you know, let's say I'm driving to the course and I'm leading the tournament in the final round and I'm nervous. I flip on Howard and I'm just immediately at ease. But Howard is I am fully obsessed with Howard. I'll admit it. Like Steely says, if my wife's not on the road, I won't even turn on the TV. I just put on old YouTube videos of Howard and listen to him, and I enjoy it, number one, but it definitely calms me down. I'll put on the same episodes that I've watched 30 times and still love it. We're in such high stress with our... Golf is just not fun a lot of the time. So any way you can get golf out of your mind, that's a good thing. And that for me, that's Howard. I listen to him. Honestly, I listen to him. If I can have a second of the day to listen, you know this, I listen to him.
I think a lot of guys, myself included, and a lot of musicians, like what they are drawn to about golf is that it offers that,
right,
for us, especially like if you're touring and you're in nice places all around the world. And if the weather's good, you don't want to be in like music mode all the time. Some people do, like Mike Shinoda from the band can just write all day and sit and then go play a show. And then the next morning, get on an airplane and fly and be writing on the plane. And he can live in that zone, which I think is kind of rare and special. But for me, like I need to be able to shut that off. It's funny because Brennan and I will go practice golf. And for me, it's just like I can just love sitting there and hitting balls and shutting down like a part of my brain and checking out. Whereas like we talked about it where Brennan absolutely cannot do that. And it's there's no part of it that's almost like this relaxing retreat.
It's not therapeutic.
It's not an escape.
I'm a little different than him in that. Me going to hit balls, I can love it. Like I love playing golf. Like it's a weird, always loved it. I've always, like, if I'm home and I can go play with my buddies, just like you guys, there's no more fun thing that I can do. I'm different than a lot of the tour players out there.
Right.
I love going and playing with Johnny and my buddies. For me, an off day would be that from golf. A work day would be hitting balls and practicing. I could take a week off technically, but still play every day with these guys and have a blast doing it. And if I'm stressed out and I can go to the range and hit balls and maybe put some music in or listen to Howard, that's different for me than a lot of players. But I can relate to that because it is sometimes therapeutic to me now. But if I'm on vacation, I'm not going to go find the golf course and play. Like that's the last thing I'm going to do. But when I'm home, I do love playing. And that's been probably my biggest asset to me in my career, is even when I'm playing poorly, even when things aren't going well, it's not like I hate the game. Right. I still go back and work at it and play, which is a big difference from probably 90% of the tour players.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a lot of times that I hate it.
And that could also hurt, too. I have a really hard time getting away from the game. I have a really hard time taking time off. Like, if in the off season, I hear guys that don't practice for 2 months, it's like mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, I think everybody has to find their own way that makes sense. I mean, for you, you like to practice, you like to play, so I don't think it hurts you. But for somebody that feels like they just have to do it, they don't want to do it,
yeah,
then it can be kind of hard. I'm a little bit in the middle. Like,
we love going out and playing, though.
Well, and that's what I was going to say, is like playing with you and Johnny, playing with Dave and Mark, like that stuff is always really fun to me. But going out and being like, okay, I'm going to do, you know, these wedge drills and putting stuff and this that stuff gets old, because people are always like, oh, how much do you practice? Are you out there like 8 hours a day just hitting balls all day and stuff? Dave hits more balls than I do.
Yeah,
that might be true.
It's definitely true. Dave, we always like to joke too that Dave's secret practices too.
I would love to have a sport where I could start now and work at and get better at. It'd be fun,
right?
Like, I would love that. There's no, I mean,
the curling,
only, curling, maybe curling. Like, I could see when I retire, like picking up tennis or something, and like grinding and hitting balls and like
that
learning.
It's really fun until you like blog your knee or something.
Yeah, I know. I get, so I don't do it now, but right. I would. Yeah, I mean, I could see it. It'd be.
For me, the thing's always been that I've wanted to do that I've never done. You did a lot of this growing up, but I've never skied at all.
Yeah.
And I would love to be like the guy that goes, oh, let's go to Mammoth. Let's go skiing. Yeah. Let's go, you know, to Vail.
That's
or
the
whatever.
Incredible. I was talking to Jamie Lovemark about this the other day. It's an incredible thing about California. I don't know anywhere else in the world where you can drive to climates. You can play golf at Riv, drive two hours, and you can go skiing. Yeah. Incredible. You can't do that. I don't know where else you can't do that in Vermont, New England.
You could also drive 2 hours and go to the desert. Palm Desert.
Yeah. That's you should get into that. We'll do that when we're like 50 and we'll have like beers and hang out at the ski lodge. And
sounds good. I'll get drunk and I'll go kill myself, and you'll be just zipping around like, hey, what's wrong, Celia?
Brendan, I can see you doing some like double daffies to spread eagle maneuvers there with those long legs.
Yeah,
I don't feel like you would be a good skier. Like, I look at you and I'm like, no, it's not going to work. You're going to go down. Wrong. You're going to have like broken arms and limbs. And
just lay in there like a cartoon character.
In skiing, they have a thing called a yard sale. When you fall and everything comes off, like goggles, helmets, poles, skis. I think that's what would happen to you. You spend, going like 2 miles an hour.
Yeah. You spend the next 20 minutes regathering your gear while people are like zipping by, making fun of you, like on the lift.
Yeah.
Like,
oh,
if you ever have a
wipeout
underneath the lift, and chair after chair after chair keeps going past, and some people are like, are you okay? And other people are like, you're an idiot. Yeah. You know, they're just talking shit as they ride a, you know, 50 feet above your head.
Sounds like the skiing equivalent of social media.
yeah, it's exactly what it is. Yeah.
It's a cross section of humanity.
When was the last time you skied?
So I grew up in Vermont originally.
Suicide Six.
Shout out. And for a long time, I was probably a better skier. I loved skiing as much as I loved golf. So this is another thing that I think helped my career, which I think you had dealt with this too. You had a winter where you grew up, right?
Yeah.
So they're around earlier than November, but I would play golf until I physically couldn't anymore. But I'd put my clubs in the basement and take my skis out and wouldn't think about golf. All I wanted to do was ski and ski race. And so guys that were beating me then, they kind of burned out. Mm-hmm. I've been playing for half the time almost that they have. And I think it helped me. And my junior year of high school, I was in the state championships, and I was skiing at Bromley, and it was a slalom. And if you straddle a gate, you get DQ'd. So I came down. Sometimes you can like step on a gate and you don't know. I came down and I was in third. I was right involved in winning state championship in Vermont. It's pretty good. That's one of the better states. And they posted my number, which means you're DQ'd. And I skied down and never skied again in my whole life. So it's been since I was 17 or 18, and I someday would like to ski again, but I'm so scared of getting hurt. And I'm kind of waiting for maybe later in my career when I can hang out and sit in the lodge and get a hang in.
Yeah. That's what I always say about skiing too. It's like when I'm ready to like go, if I get hurt,
yeah,
that's okay. I'm fine with that. I'll deal with it. Then it's time to ski.
The last probably 5 or 6 seasons, I've just been skiing and always telling people, yeah, I used to be pretty good at snowboarding. I'm definitely way better on a snowboard, but I won't do it because I'll feel like I might injure myself. So I just go super mellow on skis. I've said it so much that I actually really believe it.
Right.
I thought it was true. This year we go up and we've got one day where my wife and I have no kids and we're just with some friends. You know, we're going to have skis, but let's rent snowboards. And on that day, we'll just snowboard. We get the rental gear on like lift one. The snowboard just hanging on my leg the way it is, like my knee is hurting. I haven't done anything yet.
Right.
And yeah. It's just hanging on my leg awkwardly as I'm on the lift. And I'm already kind of like, this sucks. We get off the first lift. I buckle in. I'm having some problems with one of my bindings on my rental snowboard. So I'm like swearing about that, like this piece of shit, like yeah. I can't sounds believe like they even rent this stuff out, it won't get tight enough. Well, I do in my defense,
can't like, shred on this snowboard.
this one's
how am I supposed to shred on this?
Yeah, Mark knows what I'm talking about. It's all the gear.
It's like rental golf clubs,
but I have like
this straight.
I have a situation where like my right heel is the binding won't go tight enough, so it's kind of hovering off the board, so I'm doing like this like free heel thing and not a good look for a snowboard. I'm mad that I'm sitting in the snow. I'm mad that my bindings aren't working. And I'm just like cold. And I'm kind of like, almost like punching them, trying to get the binding to get into the position that I want it to. And I just completely sprain my thumb.
Oh my.
It's literally me just like fist fighting my snowboard.
And I'm which hand was it?
On my right.
So you were okay?
It's still bugging me.
Adult tantrum.
Full on adult tantrum. So anyway, that day at lunch, I switched the snowboard back and got to my skis. And I think that was the end of my snowboarding career.
I think skiing is so much better than snowboarding. I don't know. I wasn't a big snowboarder, but I think you can just do so much more on skis than on a snowboard.
Skiing for me is also a lot like golf. It's something that you can play as you get older and obviously maybe not as well. Hopefully you can improve
right.
like as you go, maybe, maybe not. I could see myself being 70 and still being on skis.
Yeah, there's a lot of parallels from ski racing and what we do is individual, out there on your own. It's your fault if you screw up. Yeah. I find the sports very similar, except skiing obviously is way more dangerous. But I watch these guys in the Olympics, and when I see them in the starting gate of a downhill or something, the nerves that I used to feel in the starting gate, part of you is scared. I mean, you're up there and you're looking down and it's freezing cold. It's windy at this Olympics. The course is all ice and ruts. You fell, I don't know, when last time you were there. And I remember being physically scared in the starting gate. And back when I skied, this is going to make me sound like an old guy for some reason, but we didn't have this. They have these new fences where they can hit them and then they absorb and go down. We didn't have anything.
Just concrete
so
walls.
It was scary. It was scary.
It's the golf, parking lot.
Yeah, big golf, tree. You're scared, but you're not going to die if you hit a bad shot.
I was reading this article that was pointing out the difference between summer and winter Olympics. It's like summer Olympics, maybe gymnastics, maybe a couple other things. If stuff goes really wrong, you know, you can land on your head and potentially get a serious injury, maybe die. Whereas winter Olympics, it's almost like every single sport. You're if dead. Stuff goes really wrong, downhill skiing, if you're on the luge, if you're whatever.
Figure skating.
Yeah.
Girls in the air.
When you do amateur figure skating, if that's even a term, do you wear a helmet?
I don't know.
Well, that's a real question. I've never seen anybody with a helmet, but I don't think they're showing those.
I was watching it. I was just thinking if one of these guys threw me in a twist thing, and if I had to try to land it, just not even on ice, not even with skates on, if I just had to land, like try to land on my feet, could I do it?
No.
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 Absolutely not.
No, absolutely not.
Mark, throw Dave in a twist.
I think for me, I like the Winter Olympics better, and I also think that the downhill is the most athletic sport in the world. People will think that's crazy if they don't know it, but the downhill on TV is not good to watch because you can't get a sense of how fast they're going, how steep the hill is, and they'll literally go on the course and ice it down. They'll take a hose and so I miss it a little, but I'm going to wait till we can have beers and hang out. We're playing on the senior tour like once a month.
Right. Keegan and I both just had kids and they're 2 weeks apart. So like when the kids are old enough to like want to go skiing and like
that would be, that, so that would be so fun. Yeah. And that was such a big part of my life growing up. Yeah. So like my dad was always asking me like what's going to happen with Logan, my son, if he's going to ski or, but I'm like, I really want to, but I'm going to play golf for a few more years before I break my leg or something.
And, yeah. Before I'm willing to.
You guys know what I think is the most athletic sport?
Bases?
Base playing.
Yeah. I think it's pretty good. Yeah. We were on the same page there.
When we were having dinner the other night, I think you guys were talking about, when did you see them? Was it Summer Sanitarium?
Linkin Park. Well, I've always been a big Linkin Park fan. Johnny Curran is even bigger than me. He was a big Linkin Park fan. We used to listen to them all the time. And then in high school, I went to Gillette Stadium, and where the Patriots play, and it was called Summer Sanitarium. It was Mudvayne, Deftones, Linkin Park, Limp Bizkit, Metallica. Growing in Vermont, you don't really go to, there's no concerts. You got to go to Boston or New York. And so it said started at 3. So we showed up at 3 or 4 in the afternoon, and the show didn't end until like 2 in the morning. And we were waiting there, and you guys were great. And then when Metallica came on, we were right near the stage. They just took us and moved us to the back. Like there were these guys, these Metallica fans were serious dudes. And we were like, okay, that's it for me.
No problem. I guess I'll just be over here.
Yeah, but I'd never been to a concert really in my life. And then all of a sudden we're at Gillette Stadium, sold out. And the field was packed too. So it was wild. As a band, obviously you want to play to big audiences, but do you enjoy playing in a huge like outside arena like that?
I like the feel of the energy off of like a large crowd.
Yeah.
And a stadium is actually similar in the sense to an arena where you can have a floor area that's general admission.
Yeah.
Sometimes in a weird way, you're going to have your most diehard fans right up in front. It's not going to be the most expensive ticket. It's going to be a general admission ticket. You know, there's no seating, whatever. And so there's that energy that's off that crowd that's standing and cheering and jumping and way, way into what you're doing. Put that into comparison to like an amphitheater where a lot of times you've got a small little area in the front that's general admission, but then mostly seats. And then those seats are the most expensive. And then you get back to like a grass area, and then that's going to be like GA or general admission. That's almost like a flip-flop of the energy. And so you have people who are just want to like hang out, have a nice evening, and they've bought a really nice ticket and they're hanging out. Those are the ones like up in
show
front.
Show up late.
Yeah, might show up late. And then you've got like your diehard fans who are like, I really want to go to the show, but you know, I've maybe $50 is what I can afford to pay for it.
Right.
I've saved up. I want to be there. Like I love every song. And they're like a mile away from me in the grass.
Yeah.
So it just inverts like the way that energy
works. Do you ever
works.
Recognize fan like people you don't know and you're like, oh, I've seen him at everyone, because like for golf, you could see that for with golf fans
for sure.
Just wondering, you look in the crowd, you're like, oh, there's that crazy guy. he's here again.
Yeah, there's a combination. Like there's some of them, and Mark is really, because he's been with us since the beginning also, and he like the fans, the diehards know who Mark is too.
Whoa,
like that's
cool.
If it's one thing if you know who the bass player is, that means you're pretty into the band. But if you know who the guy, like the videographer is, this person's going pretty deep.
Right.
99% of those people are actually like, they really appreciate the music. They really appreciate the band. They have a strong connection and they're really cool about it. I mean, we've seen some guys and some girls who followed an entire US tour. So they're there for like
50, 60, 80 shows like around the world. In all those cases, they're not all just have an empty pocketbook where they can just afford it. You know, they're working all year just to spend their summer going to 12 shows or something while the band's in Europe. Or it's pretty cool.
In our fan base, a lot of times you'll see too that the fans will come together as a community. And so, you know, if this person is in the fan club and they're online and reaching out and they're connecting with this other person over here, and this person lives in California, but this person lives in Texas, then they'll like stay at each other's houses, make things work, carpool, whatever. But their only connection is like through the band and meeting in that way.
You know, one really cool story I'll throw in there is a few months ago at the tribute show at the Hollywood Bowl, there was one person in Los Angeles from the fan club that housed like a dozen and a half to two dozen fans that were traveling from all over the world. And so they all just like
slept at the same
house together. And these fans were from all over the world and they just needed a place to stay and have that like kind of like community. And it was like a really cool story.
Wow. That's really cool.
That was amazing how many different countries were represented. that night. I mean, it just seemed like it was all the most hardcore fans from all over the world. It would be like if they won a contest to be like, you're the most hardcore fan from, totally. You know, Western Australia. And it's like, okay, you're there, you're in. And then you're the most hardcore fan from Slovakia. And it's like, okay, you're in. And then everybody just came together
for the Argentinian delegation.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, you could have like an opening ceremony for it. Yeah.
How do you guys manage fans when you're out there playing? Do you acknowledge them? Do you pretend to ignore them?
For me, going back to the Ryder Cup, why I think I've done well, and you see a very specific player do well at a Ryder Cup, like a Patrick Reed or Ian Poulter, you're fighting all the time to keep your emotions down in the round of golf. But in the Ryder Cup, you can feed off the crowd, and you actually can let them out on every hole, every shot. I think I feed off of the crowds. Like if I'm playing in a big crowd and they're cheering for me, I love it. The bigger the crowd, the better I feel like I play, because I just enjoy the buzz. I don't like when it's loud and people are being jerks. That's not fun. And that can happen at a lot of tournaments, but for the most part, it's good.
I've actually kind of changed over the years in how I perceive it. Originally, I was kind of like, okay, I got to be like hyper-focused and like don't acknowledge anybody. Be like, try to act like, you know, almost like your tiger, right? Just like laser focus and like, you don't see anybody, nobody else is around, whatever. That doesn't really work for me. It's not really my personality. So I think I've done a lot better when I've opened myself up a little bit more to like, somebody goes like, all right, Brandon, let's go. And like, give them a little wave or give them a little whatever. Now, that being said, there's a lot of really dumb comments that get yelled at you. Yeah. I will not reward stupidity while I'm on the course.
Yeah.
I will not reward stupidity with a wave or a smile or even a look in your direction. So if you want to give me like a cheer, I'll give you something back. Otherwise,
I mean, you've played with me. I get people think they're original with what they yell at you. They yell about my Jordan shoes 20 times a hole.
20 times a hole.
A hole. And they all think they're all saying the exact same thing, but they all like they'll say it and then look at their buddies and then they burst out laughing. Like it's like,
Keegan, what are you going to get me a pair 10. Of those Jordans? I mean, whenever we play together and we'll go around 18 holes and you'll hear the same thing.
Yeah.
100 times. I mean, you even said you got paired with Jamie Lovemark on Sunday in Phoenix. We've got this group text going with Keegan and John and Jamie and I. And Keegan's like, when he found out they were paired together, he goes, I'll do us both a favor and not wear my red Jordans tomorrow.
Yeah, my red Jordans bring out extra comments. And I'm dead serious. If playing with Jamie or one of my buddies, I'd be embarrassed because it's like people are screaming. But I love it. And you guys can always feed off the crowd for the most part. I mean, I would imagine if you went to a Linkin Park concert, there's Linkin Park fans there.
I hope so.
Yeah, I do too. Well, you're never going to get booed, right? I mean.
So one of my favorite experiences that we've done, we show up in Ireland. We've never played this there before. It's probably 2003-ish. So we've gone through all of Hybrid Theory already. Now we're out on our second major world tour. And this is our first time ever going to Ireland, and we're starting the tour there. We're in Dublin. I'm already like, I love Ireland. Like, I'm all in. This is my first time here. I've been here for like a week, played some great golf, had a bunch of Guinness. Like, I love the people. This is so much fun. We go to our first show. It's The Darkness, then Linkin Park, then Metallica at a festival setup. The Darkness is playing. They're a UK band, and they write great songs. Really fun, like sing along, but it's in like an 80s style, hair band oriented, almost a little bit like Spinal Tap sense of humor to it. They're killing it, crushing it. Anything this guy says, the crowd can't get enough of it. They play their songs, everyone's singing, jumping, clapping. It's like a party. Super, super fun. I go backstage, I'm like, this crowd is great. I'm telling everybody, we've had such an amazing last week in Ireland. This place is so awesome. This is going to be a great show. I'm basically like the messenger saying, right, this we're gonna kill it. We go out there and the crowd just completely turns. It's Braveheart all over, like fuck you, you bastards, like coming from the crowd. Like,
wow,
there's a contingency that's just not happy that we're there. We learn after the fact that In the End had been such a big hit that it had crossed over in a major way really, really quickly on like pop radio. So that whole fan base that would be there for Metallica or be there for like a harder rock kind of oriented crowd immediately knew us or thought of us as a boy band.
Right.
And now we're showing up to play there and they've had all this, like, they're like, we've heard your stuff way too much and we're so mad at you.
Wow.
Like, we just want to like throw stuff at right. you. Like it, yeah. it was such a shift from what had happened on the band before.
Right.
I remember looking out there and just being like, wow, this is really hostile. And then and all of us, yeah, like all of us reacted to that a little bit differently. Like a couple of us are like, all right, like game on. Like we need to play it like extra well, win over who we can. And this is going to be like a fight.
You told me some story about playing some small club or something where they had to put like a chain link fence up in front of you.
Oh, it was a club where they had like chain link fences almost in like the old style music videos. Like you're playing like a bar and you've got a chain link fence, but it's so that when bottles, if they're thrown or whatever, Whoa. They're not hitting the people on the stage.
Wow.
That's yeah. crazy. Was that Alcatraz in Milan?
I don't even know. We played a show in a metal show, like a hardcore old school metal show in Italy, where I swear at one point, I know it's not possible, but I swear I saw a cow get thrown at the stage. That was like bottles at a certain point, like quarters. Yeah, no big deal. Bottles. Yeah, you can get hurt with that, but no big deal. Like, whoa, that was just a cow that got thrown. Like, how did that crowd throw a cow at that band? What is going on out here? Just insanity.
That's funny.
You asked about recognizing like fans out there, and Dave and I have been friends for so long, so we know so many of the same people. And so our favorite thing is basically to see somebody in the crowd and do the whole like, who does that person remind you of?
Right.
He'll be in the middle of the song and I'll be like giving him a head nod and pointing to this person, and then he'll just look back at me a couple times, and then he'll throw out some kid's name that we went to school together with in like third grade, and I'm just like, nailed it.
Awesome. In between songs, I'll just go to Mark and be like, hey, have you seen Keegan's here tonight? Like, he'll be like, wait, what? I'm like, yeah, keep an eye out for Keegan. And yeah. then like I'll look, and like two songs later, he'll just be like crying, laughing. And he'll just be like, yeah.
yeah speaking of that. That's the Bulgarian Keegan.
Yeah. He's got, Dave looks like John Wood, like big time, doesn't he?
You know, John.
I've been thinking about this since I sat down. I've been thinking about this since I sat down.
You used to caddy for Hunter. So Dave's buddies with Hunter.
Oh, okay.
That's why
he's got a John look. John Wood.
Yeah, you could have a little bit.
I think John Wood has much thicker calves than
caddies have big calves.
That's true.
Yeah.
Carrying all of our shit all the time.
A lot of walking with heavy.
Yeah. Yeah, which thank you guys for your help the other day when I was carrying my own bag up the hill at Riviera with 75 clubs in it. Must have weighed 100 pounds.
Yeah. I don't know.
They're walking behind me like, wow, that's heavy. Yeah.
I think one of your clubs that were in there was actually Christian's too.
Right? It was Christian.
Yeah. That's caddy's clubs.
That's how you know you have a lot of clubs in there is when you're on the range, your caddy's flying from England, and a rep comes over and puts a club in your bag that says Christian Donald on it.
Right. Well, Steely's a maniac with clubs. He's trying clubs every week. He's figured out a new setup, a new club, a new this for this course. I'm going to put a 16 and a half in instead of a 16. And he's going to do a mini driver and a one iron.
I got mini driver and one iron going this week.
He's got all sorts of wild stuff going on. Every week I look over, he's got like 25 head covers in his bag. He's going to dial it in. But you do a good job. It works.
Thanks.
I mean,
thank you.
Yeah, I mean,
nicest thing you've ever said to me.
Well, then I completely take it back. But I mean, I can't do that. He switches clubs. I have to like get a new club, test it out. Put it on track, man. Play it with it for 2 weeks. He's like, oh, I just put a 1.5 iron in that goes only 2 feet off the ground.
I remember at Congressional like 3 years ago, maybe the last time we were there, whatever it was. I went out in the pro-am, morning pro-am. I'm hitting my 3-wood awful. And I'm like, well, anything's better than this. I don't have anything else with me. So I sent one of the reps, Stick, nickname, Stick. All the caddies and reps have nicknames, right? So this one's Stick. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I just said, hey, I need something. I don't care what it is. Just figure it out. And he built it and I hit it after the round. I hit like 5 shots with it and I was like, great. And you go,
no, wrong. You can't put that in play. That's not allowed.
You can't put it in play. You haven't even hit it on the golf course. And I'm like, well, the one that I have is terrible. So I would rather have something that I at least think might be better. Something I don't have any scar tissue with.
Right. And this goes with amateurs too. A new club can get you excited to hit it, which could mean everything.
But you're very much more like, these are my clubs, and if I'm going to play something new, I need TrackMan numbers, I need shots at Bears Club, I need shots on this course, and they need
normally to, something needs to physically break for me to switch clubs.
And I always like when you get like a new driver or something, you always drive it so good. It doesn't matter what you have, right? But you'll be like, is that spinning enough? And I go, yeah. Too much? Spinning too much?
Yeah. What does that mean? Spinning too much?
No. Yeah. It looks perfect. Are you sure?
Spinning enough? I gotta go through a whole
process.
Is it
too perfect?
Yeah.
It might be too perfect. It's too perfect, right?
Is it too straight?
Yeah. Yeah. Is it not turning over?
Sometimes it's too straight. Yeah. He will say that too. He'll be like, but I don't know that I can turn it over. It just goes right where I'm looking every time instead of drawing 3 yards.
That's my process. I have to get a new club try and then break it down and start from scratch.
Be a maniac about it.
Yeah.
So I've got all the different clubs, but I don't really care. I'm like, yeah, this is fine. I can hit this. And you're more like, no, something has to break in order for me to put something new in. But when I put something new in, even when it looks perfect, I have to figure out why it's not right.
Yeah, totally. Which is ridiculous. Stupid. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah. It's good. It's looking at me. So Keegan has... Keegan's got a rule
This is private stuff.
This is funny though.
Yeah.
So
you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. How many times does a fan come up to you to take a picture, and the camera's like, I don't have it out. Or our joke is, oh, whoops, it's looking at me, and it's like the thing is reversed. So I have a joke with Steely that they have. What is it, 4 seconds?
4 second rule. And then I just walk away. He doesn't actually but he's like, he'll go like, if I'm standing there, he'll just go like, 1, 2.
I mean, three. Honestly though, how many times do they take the picture?
Every time.
And it's boop, it's done. It's always, something happened. I can't find the thing.
Normally it's because they're handing their phone to their friend, right? Yeah. And then the friend, like, a lot of the time with golf, it's like older fans and stuff too. Yeah. So they grab somebody else's phone and they're looking at it like it's a lobster, like what it is, right? And so they're pointing it at you, and then it is inevitably going to be like, oh, it's looking at me.
Yeah, it's looking at me.
So now we say that for everything. Yeah. It doesn't even have to do it's with taking pictures. It's looking at me. If something's going wrong, it's looking at me.
Oftentimes, I'll just say, give me the camera, and then I go it and do like the selfie it'll help
the process. Takes more than 4 seconds.
Three seconds. You can do a selfie in 3 seconds. Yeah. Give it to me.
Yeah.
Do you guys ever get see fans out there that bring like their big giant iPad out to take photos out on the course?
Rick Smith always has an iPad.
Rick's is huge now too. Yeah. The one this week, he's like, oh, I got a new one. His last one had like the full spider web cracks across them. He's like he's getting like glass splinters in his finger while he's trying to like fast forward my swing and stuff like that.
You guys have got to have him on this podcast. You gotta get some cocktails going and just let him go. You guys don't say a word. Just you're only allowed to say one word to him, like and or good, or just let him go, because he is the biggest character.
Yeah.
I had lunch with him the other day.
Yeah.
And they're designing a new course or something. And he was going in on the thing. And I was fascinated by the guy.
So Rick is one of my coaches. He is, he's 60 now.
He's
turned 60. But he's coached Jack Nicklaus, coached Phil Mickelson. Lee Jansen won 2 U.S. Opens with Rick.
Right.
Anyway, he's a great guy. He's awesome, old school coach, one of the most famous coaches in the world. But he's got more energy than every person I know.
In the world.
And he's just so passionate about the game. Like, you could be a 30 handicap, and he's like, I can fix you. Come in here, do this, stand like that, move your arm this way, and then smash it. You know, and it's just like...
There's a big difference between the Rick Smith era of coaches and the new coaches.
Yeah.
They're so much more like they're used to doing big schools and blah, blah, blah. Right. And so he can just entertain. Like, he may not
he's
be making you better,
right?
But he makes you think you know what I mean? Like, he's fun to hang out with.
And he's, Chris Mason, we'll talk about like walking around with Rick. Chris is another one of my coaches. I have a lot of coaches. I need a lot of help. But Chris will walk around with Rick, and he's like, I've walked 25 rounds with Rick at this point. And he's coming up with these stories that would be like, if it had happened to me, I would tell him the first time I met somebody.
Yeah, it's the number one story.
Yeah, it's the number one story. And I'm just getting it after spending 200 hours with the guy, where he's like, oh, yeah, you know the big break on Golf Channel? I created that. I created it. And the Golf Channel got so mad that it got popular and we're making so much money that they bought it from me. You know, and it's like, wait, what? He's never even told me that after 5 years of working with him or something. But he's got all these crazy stories, so he would be a good guest. We'll have him on at some point.
He'd be a ton of fun. When we ate lunch with him Tuesday, I think, it was, you know, Mark and I are half sneaking into player dining right at this point.
Half?
Full sneaking. Well, mine was a full sneak.
Well, half, by half, by half, I mean, I have Brendan's extra credentials. So I'm now Brendan's deal and I'm covering up the picture as I'm showing people to go in. Mark has nothing. So we're just, we're kind of just like,
and you guys are like t-shirts and jeans. So you don't even look like, maybe they could sneak through.
Yeah. There's no question. Like, there's no collars. There's whatever. But Rick's there with us. And as we're walking in, the guy who's working the door, he had already given him like a, brought him a sandwich out from player dining. So he's like, oh, this guy's here. Oh, okay. We're good. Like, me and this guy have already hung out. Right. Like, we're fine. And sure enough, he's just like, these guys are okay. So like, we just watched.
That's right. That's he's friends with everybody.
That's just a that total, explains total Rick Smith.
Person. That's perfect. And the thing is, what had happened earlier in the day is Rick doesn't have his new credential for this year because
of course he does.
He normally picks it up at Phoenix. Yeah. Blah blah. I didn't go to Phoenix, so he couldn't get anywhere. But he gets everywhere by just schmoozing with everybody.
Day, yeah.
So he's like talking to this guy, made best friends with him to let him get in and get a credential. And then he's not even supposed to be in there eating, And then he's dragging Dave and Mark in, too. He's like, oh, yeah, these guys are okay. They're with us. And but come to find out, he's given the guy a tuna sandwich already. He's been like, hey, you hungry? Let me grab you something in there.
He's greased the wheels. Yeah. He's greased the wheels with the little, you know.
He does that at Augusta, too, which I am shocked by, that he's able to pull that up. But he pulls it off. He, like, walks in with a member with his arm around the guy.
He won't now. If they hear this, he'll be barred from the grounds. No matter how many times you go, no matter how many times you're playing the Masters, you inevitably do something wrong and you're pulled to the side and be like, don't do this. Don't
next
do
time, we'd next appreciate time. It if your head wasn't so big.
That my head's too big for Augusta.
It doesn't fit through the doorways.
Sir, could you please lessen the size of your head? That's a joke that if you're listening to this and you have no context for it, you have no clue.
No idea. So I'm going to give context right now. So my head is very small. Well, Keegan's just the opposite. He's got this giant head.
Yeah.
Too big for his body.
Yeah. That's a Seinfeld line. Whole family has it. My dad used to call it, in my family, they call it a bison head.
Yeah, Bradley
like a
bison head.
Bradley bison, like a bison buffalo. The heads are so big. And my grandmother, like, if you look and you see the origin of the bison head, and it goes all through my whole family.
It's just a trait that cannot be.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever done a hat swap? Can we do one right now?
Oh, we'll do that. We'll take a picture of it afterwards, and we can post that. But we do it for Keegan's charity day. We swap hats and hit one shot just because it looks so ridiculous.
He looks more ridiculous in my hat than I look in his, which is probably wild. Right. Yeah.
But one of my favorite things about your big head, the story that I like to tell, is that everybody thinks that you loved the visor when you first got on tour. Right. You were always wearing visors. You know, you're known for your visor. You went in the PGA back with the visor.
Oh, I get that all the time, too. Yeah.
30 couples.
So the only reason he wore a visor is Strixon didn't have a hat that was big enough for him.
And that's exactly the reason.
After he won the PGA, they were like, okay, I guess we'll make you some giant freak hat that'll fit over your giant head now. But you have to win a major, and until then, you got to wear a visor.
I can't believe this because I've had two conversations just this week about how I need an extra big hat. My hats that I wear for Strixon, the company, the factory's in like Vietnam or something, and it burned down or something crazy. And they're like, we can't get hats big enough for you. Okay. And then I wear Travis Matthew clothing. I was doing a Travis Matthew shoot at this in Santa Monica, and they're like known for their hats, like people collect them, but I can't wear Travis Matthew hats. They don't fit my giant head. And they're like, we're going to make, you can ask for samples of extra big sized hats. So I'm going to get them. So two conversations. It's what day is it? It's Thursday. Since Tuesday that I've had about extra big head hats.
Well, when you have a giant head, it comes up a lot. I'm a walking candy apple here.
You've never said that. That's like the first time.
That'll just give your gallery more ammunition.
Probably. Yeah. So it's great.
Yeah. If you want to be original, if you want to be original, don't go after the shoes. Go after the hat.
The hat, yeah.
Or the head size.
Keegan, you talked about when you were 17 and you did your final run down the downhill and you hit that gate and that was kind of the last run. You ever think back about how your life might be different had you made that gate and won that ski championship?
At that point in my life, I had become well better at golf. But there was a specific moment. I was on the side of the hill. It was a slalom race. It was freezing cold. It was raining. And all I could think about was how much I'd rather be playing golf. And that was literally the moment where I made this decision. It was on the side of that hill. I was miserable. And that's when I completely switched everything to play golf. And that was going to be my main focus. And yeah, it was a good decision. Thank God that day happened.
As you guys look forward in your careers, do you feel a pressure to perform at this point, at this age?
I mean, there's always pressure, yeah. Right? There's always pressure to perform. I think the better you play, the more pressure there is.
I guess my question is do you feel like you're running out of time or something? Like with music, you can keep playing. As an athlete, you have a window. With golf, the window's a little bit wider.
Yeah,
right?
It's nice with golf because at my age, at almost 35, you're running out of time in most sports. And for me, like, I should kind of be in my prime at this point, like where I've learned enough over the last 13 years of being a pro, but my body's still healthy enough that I can hit it long enough and be healthy enough to play a full schedule. So I don't feel that pressure at this point, but I think that pressure would come if you started being injured more or if you felt like you weren't progressing. Like, you know, if you kind of like went, well, maybe I played my best already and now I'm going downhill. But I mean, I think we're both headed the right direction. And Keegan's a lot younger than I am too. So he's still got a few more years
on me. For the first time in my career, I've had that on my mind. I'm not worried I'm running out of time, but I've never thought about it. I think about it now. Like, okay, I'm 31. I'm no longer one of the young guys on the tour, which is a weird feeling. All of a sudden, it had happened over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
You see guys playing well to their almost to their 50s now, but there's a part of me that thinks that I hope that I can play maybe till I'm 45 and just retire. Now, I don't know if I probably won't do that, but I would love to get to a point where I can play a very limited schedule. I say that, it doesn't really fit my personality, but I know that over the next 5 to 8 years, these are going to be my years. And then after that, you still can play well. But historically speaking, like you said, this is the prime.
Yeah, this is the prime. It's different than other sports because you've got this cross-section of experience and health. We can still hit it as good as we ever have, right? But we know a little bit better about how to prepare and how to travel better.
Yeah, I mean, the courses.
This is our eighth time at Riviera, for instance.
Yeah.
It's like by the time you've been here eight times, like you know all the pins, you know the setup, you know, okay, when the wind's this way, we got to do this.
And you know where to go get dinner, you know where to stay.
You know not to turn right on Sunset and get stuck in the traffic on the way out. Exactly. And if you don't know that, then you're in trouble.
I'm in trouble. I stayed down there my rookie year. I missed the cut.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Now, every other year you've played great.
Yeah.
Because I remember there's a lot of good finishes.
I definitely, it's been on my mind. It's not that I'm scared or that I'm worried. It's I'm running out, but I never had it on my, I never was 31, obviously, before. I was always on the tour. I was 26, 27 and you're, but now it's definitely, I've thought about it for the first time, which is different.
You guys both have young, congratulations, obviously. You both have young children at home. Has that set in yet and changed a little bit of your perspective? And in some ways, even almost maybe re-energize, almost like appreciate the position that you're in and what you have in front of you and breathe new life into it?
I think it has. I think it also can add a little pressure too because you want to keep going for him. I would love for someday for him to be able to come out and watch me and be able to still be playing well. And
you want him running on the green when you win the green jacket or something.
I mean,
there'd be nothing better than that.
Yeah, and historically, guys who have kids actually seem to play better. Yeah. I talked to Brant Snedeker about this. This is while Joe was pregnant. And he said something. I forget exactly what he said, but he won one time. And then when he had kids, he won seven times in 5 years as opposed to... Oh. And it can change your perspective. It can help you. For me, it can help me feel less guilty when I'm home instead of... I can feel guilty about not practicing. But if I'm home with Logan and my wife, I can... That guilt isn't there. Sure. So it can definitely help.
Brendan knows this about me, but I'm a huge like mentality guy. That's a big part of what I do or what I want to be doing in my life is to have like my mentality first and foremost kind of on point. I want to be able to appreciate what I'm doing. I want to be able to recognize what is good and kind of see like a purpose in that. And I think when we started having kids with music, it really reset my dial for almost like my passion to be able to do it. And because it recentered me on almost the purpose of what I was doing in the first place.
I definitely feel that. It's exciting to play well and come home and see the crew. It's exciting. I feel the same different purpose going to the course and practicing. Like I know I'm working towards something bigger now than as opposed to just going out and playing for myself, which was for years. Now I plan for two other people that are a huge part of what's going on. So it makes it more fun too.
Boys, Keegan, it's customary here. You came as a guest. You leave here as a member.
I like that.
So congratulations on that. It is a very, very tough and tight community here.
Feels really good.
Yeah, it probably feels amazing.
Yeah,
it feels like a Ryder Cup.
Yeah, it does.
If you're honest, it feels like a Ryder Cup.
Now you and Dave share even more in common.
Well, I didn't know you were from New England either. That was nice.
You knew, but you didn't know.
Yeah.
I think you felt it.
I felt the connection. Wow.
Yeah.
Heartland.
Having said that, congratulations on becoming a member. And then also, do you have any final words of wisdom, whether it be about golf, any parting words for Brendan or John Curran?
Johnny weird. Boy.
Anything?
Oh,
for the
I got
listeners?
A question for you. Can I jump in here?
Yeah.
So you were talking about driving and listening to music or listening to Howard. When John was on the pod, he mentioned a 16 or 18 hour drive from Florida to Texas.
Yeah, to Houston.
Houston, and you guys listened to an album the whole way. And he just remembers that trip. Do you remember what that album was?
Oh, my goodness. Well, we were way into Chevelle then, but I don't know if that was that. I mean, geez, I don't... Give me a hint.
It was not in the same genre.
Oh, it was... is it Sigur Rós?
Yes.
Yeah. Are they still playing? Are they still around?
I don't know.
Because this band had made up their own language, right? That's their thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, Sigur Rós. Yeah. That felt good.
And he was talking about how cool music is and how different songs and albums take you to that place in your life.
Totally.
And what it means to you. And so it's cool that you remember that.
Yeah. That trip, I miss those times so much because first off, we just turned pro. We're playing the Hooters Tour. It's awful, but you're playing as a pro. You're playing for cash. For some reason, decided to drive. Flying wasn't an option.
Right.
But it probably was cheaper.
Yeah,
it wasn't like, oh, should we look at flights? It's just whose car we're going to drive. And that brings me back to those times. But those Sigur Rós, I'm gonna look them up. I'm going to play them this afternoon because they were awesome. I love them.
Good stuff. So any parting words of wisdom? Any?
Go Patriots.
Okay.
Go Celtics. Go Red Sox. Go Bruins. It's looking at me.
It's
always looking at me. I'm happy to be on. I've always been a huge Linkin Park fan.
Obviously.
So that's fun to get to know you guys. And it's been fun.
I want somebody to come on and say, Dave, I've always hated everything you've done.
I wouldn't mind that.
You would like it. You would actually take it really well. You would be like, that's great. Like, I'd love to hear more. I actually love Linkin Park, but I hate the bass in Linkin Park.
We talked about that at one point.
That guy, he's driving me crazy.
I guess lastly, where can people follow you on socials or where can they keep up with Mr. Keegan Bradley, Mr. Big Head?
I have Twitter. It's at Keegan_Bradley and then my Instagram's KeeganBradley1 or something. I used to love it. Like I used to love talking to people on Twitter and posting stuff about me, or now I have such a hard time because no matter what I post, it's brutal.
Yeah,
but
well, you can't read the comments.
You can't
get into that. And maybe this doesn't even. Maybe this stays on in. Maybe it doesn't.
Right.
But for the record, I was texting with Brendan when the whole Miguel Angel Jimenez thing went on, and I was just like, I love Keegan. Just for how this is going down and what he's doing. And Brendan was like, well, that's nice. And maybe you even said, like, I'll tell him you said that, because yeah. he's just getting annihilated yeah. on, like, Twitter and whatever
well,
else.
Well, I think there was very strong reactions. You can, I don't care if you put it on or not on this. This is fine, because there's very strong reactions both sides. I think the European reaction was against me. At the time, I needed people to tell me that, because I was down. And to this day, I'm so embarrassed. Like, around the match play on Instagram or something, you know, those, like,
yeah,
the you click that button and it's all those random videos, it pops up and it's like, oh, it's such a nightmare. Like, I can't even watch a second of it. But it was, that was wild. I mean, and that, I wouldn't do that today. But when it happened, I didn't think we'd be on TV, because it sure. had no relevance to the tournament. We both were going to go home. And then I signed my card and I walked to my car, and it was like a swarm of reporters. Like something you'd see in like TMZ or like for a Brad Pitt or something, like crazy.
Well, that's the subcontext for me of it, is that you guys are competing and it's okay for you guys to get upset with each other. Apart from being on TV, that aside, in the reality of the moment, I felt like nobody handled themselves in a way that was out of line.
No,
it was,
it's just because it was golf, and golf
it was just that it was heated.
Right.
But then you put that on TV, and suddenly now people are like, "You guys are supposed to be these robots
right.
who, you know, have golf decorum no matter what," and mm-hmm. then it's an unrealistic expectation.
Honestly, I'm so embarrassed of it, because it's cringeworthy when I watch it. But
everybody loves this idea that, like, we're all just pulling for each other all the time, right. and it's like, if you're playing somebody in a match play match, that they hit a great shot, and you're like, that was amazing
great.
To watch.
I
loved
it.
That.
Yeah.
yeah. I wish that would have gone in for you. It's like, no, I want him to hit it
in the water
yeah. on every hole,
yeah.
and then just say, hey, that's good, pick that up.
I love
up.
When you
on.
See interviews where guys say that. They're like, I just want him to play well, and
yeah.
and it's like, in match play, there is not a part of you that wants him to. I mean, I guess if you beat them and you both played really well, but I'd rather him play bad and beat him 7-6
yeah, sure.
and go home and get it's looking
yeah,
at me
get a hang
get
in.
It, yeah.
yeah. Yeah, and your best case scenario is, I want them to play their best and I want to beat them.
Right.
Right. But it's also okay if, like, you're like, I didn't play very well and I still beat them.
Yeah,
like, that's
totally
that's also fine.
Yeah. Well, and it's the same goes with, like, when somebody posts a good number, you know, on Sunday, and they're waiting for the leaders to come in and they do the interview and they're like, well, you know, I wouldn't root against anybody.
Right.
It's like, of course you would.
Yeah.
Everybody does.
Yeah.
Actually, at Safeway this year, I think Tony Finau posted a good number, and he ended up finishing second. And he said something that wasn't the normal response, which I appreciate.
Yeah,
I appreciated that, because it's honest. It's like, well, yeah, I hope that's good enough.
Yeah,
like, I hope that's good enough, and I hope that, like, Brendan doesn't birdie the last couple
yeah,
holes and
yeah.
beat me. Like, I hope yeah. that's good enough for me to at least get into a playoff or something. And it's like, well, yeah, of course you do.
Yeah, in any other sport, you would never say that.
No.
Like, if Tom Brady goes down and scores a touchdown to go up 31-30, he's not going to, not that he's going to ever do an interview in the middle of the game, but he wouldn't say to his teammates, I hope they play their best coming in.
Yeah.
He'd go, I hope they throw interception, fumble, blah, blah,
yeah.
blah.
Yeah, hope they hand it right over
yeah.
to us and you
yeah.
guys don't have to
yeah.
worry.
Yeah.
I hope the center just really feels the pressure and
yeah. Yeah.
snaps the ball straight in the ground. We recover a silly fumble and we win. We
yeah.
go out, we'll
right.
take a couple knees, and that'll be the end of the
right.
game. Like, no more, we're done.
But in all the other sports too, you're always trying to gain whatever advantage you can too, right?
Yeah,
it's
you
like,
can hold or try to get away with it.
And yeah, and I mean, you're a hero if you're getting away with stuff,
yeah.
you know, to your home, your fan base. And in golf, if you're ever, like, not cheering for somebody else or something, you're a terrible person. And that's not right. It's not the
yeah.
way it is.
Maybe this is the last thing we'll say. Maybe.
Okay.
The nice thing in a lot of ways too with golf, and it's so different from every other sport in that respect, is that were you to have to call fouls on yourself in basketball.
Oh, yeah.
Or soccer or whatever, that would be an absolute disaster.
Yeah, it was.
One of the beauties of golf is, obviously, you guys have officials
yeah.
on tour, but at the same time, you're in charge of calling things on yourselves. That would never, ever, ever fly. And it sets golf apart in a unique way that hopefully
right.
will remain
yeah.
in that vein, because it is something that's really special, where it is there's so much of it that requires you to be in charge of your own
integrity.
Yeah, your own integrity.
And Keegan's even had moments where, like, he hasn't done anything wrong, and he, like...
Yeah. I've had a couple.
Gets penalized or withdraws from the tournament because anybody, like somebody said, oh, maybe this happened or that happened. It's like, well, no, that didn't happen. But like the one that you withdrew from in Colorado was insanity.
It was wild. That was a weird one. If I could go back, I probably wouldn't have done
it. Yeah, that one was even over the top. I mean, I understand why you did it, but that was crazy.
I had doubt that I took the right ruling when 99.9% sure I did. Really 100%. But there was a doubt in my mind, and it was just messing with me. And it was just like, I just finally had to call it on myself and withdraw. And it cost me going to the Tour Championship that year.
Imagine any other sport where they're like,
Hey
guys, like imagine a safety puts his arm up at a, you know, and says, hey, I might have accidentally touched him a little early there on the way. Why don't you just call that on me and make sure? Because I don't want us to go to the Super Bowl this year. Like, I wouldn't be right for us to go to the Super Bowl like that.
I don't even think the official could then call a foul.
No,
in that sense,
couldn't. He'd be like, "Well, I didn't see it." So, you're scaring me.
My hands were all over him. Just throw the yellow flag right now.
This was great.
Yeah,
loved having you here.
Maybe season two, we have Keegan and John on at the same time.
I think that's a really good idea.
That would be pretty good.
We'll all fly to Florida.
Oh, now you're talking.
Bears Club,
Boku Bangs,
Wolf Games, cocktails, brewery beers, straight into.
Bedtime
podcast. Podcast in bed. Sleepy cast.
The horizontal podcast. That sounds really fishy. Yeah. But thank you, Keegan, for being here. And from us, Marcus.
Member-guest.com. You can hear all of our podcasts right there. And member guest official on Instagram and member guest on Twitter.
May your drives fly straight and your guitars stay tuned. That's it from us. Adios.
Adios.
Hey, guys.
Okay, we always forget to do this, but we have to do a group picture.
We got to do a group photo. We got to do a haddock
thing. Okay.